Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and we do not have Fred today. He decided to go play Scrabble or something. I don't know. But with me is the co-host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here on this wrestling network, Abraham Delgado. My friend, how are you?
I'm doing great and really happy that we are going to talk about Triple Mania, right? That was our lead topic tonight. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I gotta say, I'm really excited about next week. AEW, Arena Mexico, I'm there. I mean, I'm not going to be physically there, but I'm just so excited. I have not been looking forward for a Dynamite for a while. I want to see that building and see if they actually mic it well this time. I want to see what AEW does. Do they keep the setup? Will we hear the crowd? So many options. So, yeah, man. I'm happy about AEW lately.
Me too. And I kind of want to start there because you and Ricardo do a great job covering the lucha scene and just wrestling in general for this podcasting network. And you are a little more ingrained in that part of the world than I am. So I want to start there. This obviously means something from a professional wrestling landscape. Anytime you get a company outside of CML or AAA running Arena Mexico, it's a big deal. What does this mean for the Spanish-speaking fans that are so ingrained within CMLL and Mexican wrestling as a whole? Because I think this might be the first time an American company is running Arena Mexico, or at least for television, they are.
Yeah, that's what people have told me. Because I actually asked Ricardo, my other co-host, and he told me that AEW is basically like the first time that, like you said, a U.S. companies has run there. And I got to say, Latin America is WWE country. I'm not going to lie about it. Like, if you go to Facebook, there are, like, for example, Lucha Libre Online is Hugo Sabinovich's website, Facebook, blog, whatever, Twitter. And they barely talk about WWE. They never talk about CMLL, but it's always WWE all the time. So it is actually a big deal because it is basically Tony Khan going into this market that has been WWE-centric all of this time. So that's why I'm excited about the show and really curious about the crowd. Because normally on CMLL on Fridays, it's the tourist crowd. We are probably going to get like those marquee wrestling crowd on next Wednesday. So I think that's why it's another interesting aspect about the show. Because we're going to see it's not like the usual tourist fans. So yeah, we'll see how they play it.
I'm really intrigued, as you mentioned, the setup I think is going to be really fascinating. How, like, Tony Khan is a wrestling nerd, but he's also an American-based promoter. So you kind of have two different scopes there. Is he going to keep that traditional setup where you got the steps and you got the background where it's unique to Arena Mexico, almost like WWE for so long, every pay-per-view had their own stage. Oh, yeah. And I mean, they realized it was a waste of money, but man, it ruled because it felt unique. It didn't feel like a boilerplate show. It felt special. And when you watch an Arena Mexico show, at least to me, when you see that backdrop, it feels different. It feels special. It feels like you're in a place of wrestling reverence and history. Is he going to want to keep that? Is he going to want to make it his own where he keeps that and adds in some other touches? Or is he just going to go straight up, this is a Dynamite, we're running the Dynamite set? I think that's very intriguing because you can argue that he wants to bring Arena Mexico in his own vision, but yeah. He's also a DVDR guy and an observer reader for decades. Will he want to change what makes Arena Mexico special, which is a lot of it has to do with the feel and ambiance, and it starts with that presentation. So I think that's going to be the number one thing for me to look at. And because we know that Tony Khan has a respect for wrestling tradition and the other wrestling cultures, unlike what WWE has shown to us over the past few years, especially last weekend when Rey Mysterio saying that WWE legitimized Lucha Libre. You can screw off, man. That's a bunch of horseshit. But
that's so embarrassing to say.
It is.
I don't know how he was able to say that out loud. Like, I get it that Vince McMahon and WWE made him a millionaire. But come on, just have some standards. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you were on the When Worlds Collide original show. Like, I watched that show for the first time a couple weeks ago, Abraham. I don't know if I told you that. But it didn't feel like, because I lost 31 years of context watching it. It didn't feel special. To where, like, I feel like we get a show kind of like that semi-regularly, especially with the advent of AEW and how New Japan has been over the past 15 years. But, man, trying to transport myself back to what the mid-90s was like, you could just feel that show felt special. And you were on it. You understand what Lucha is. You were arguably the most influential high flyer of all time. And to say, hey, I'm going to take a big check to delegitimize everything that I used to believe in, if he still believes in it anymore. I mean, like, it was so disheartening. And it's I think this show happening a week and a half later, I really do think that AEW and CMLL have a huge opportunity in front of them to not legitimize Lucha Libre, because we know Lucha itself has been legitimate for eons and eons, but to show the world that Rey Mysterio is full of shit, and this style is alive and thriving, especially with, like, CML's last year and a half has been tremendous.
And they have been all over the world. In every promotion, every country, CMLL has been there. And it's been interesting seeing CMLL's reaction to what's happening with AAA. Because they have been, like, announcing their shows as authentic Lucha Libre, which is, like, what they should do. They should embrace, because AAA will never, like, even try to be authentic Lucha Libre.
Abraham, let me ask you this real quick before you go on. Wasn't the whole point of AAA's existence and splitting off from CMLL to present something that was a little less traditional Lucha Libre?
Yeah, so now it became traditional Lucha Libre through the act of WWE magic. Just like when, before 1983, nobody went to wrestling shows. Did you know that? We only saw wrestling shows in high school gyms, on bars, but then
bingo halls, baby.
Yeah, bingo halls. But Vince created, like, brought wrestling to the stadiums. We all know that's bullshit. And we're going to, So AAA. When I watched the When Worlds Collide show, excuse me, Worlds Collide, the when is not in the title, the new one. And when they were talking about, they even mentioned like AAA was the alternative. AAA was was breaking away from tradition, yet they are saying that it is traditional lucha libre. It is weird. I wonder what like a real WWE fans feels like, what he thinks, he or she thinks. Like, does he think that, does that person get the incongruency about saying that it is classic lucha libre and it is not at the same time? It's just freaking weird.
It is really weird. And I kind of want to jump forward into some of this Dynamite show, because one thing that's really interesting, and it, I think it's pretty divisive, is Mystico is getting a singles match with MJF.
Oh, yeah.
And from an American fan perspective, it's like, man, you have this megastar Mystico who, I don't know if there's any wrestler in the entire world who is more over than Mystico is in Arena Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But MJF feels like an odd opponent for him, considering what you have in the entire promotion. I'm curious to what you've seen from the Latin American fans about this match. Are they excited for it? I know when AEW sent stars to CMLL in the past, most notably the Blackpool Combat Club, like it was a super no vacancy house at Arena Mexico that Friday. Is there any kind of like real excitement for Mystico and MJF? I know there was for Chris Jericho, even though us in America, we didn't really care, but there's a reverence for Lionheart and a respect for what he was and what he is. Do we have anything of that sort or excitement with an MJF Mystico match?
People have been mixed about it. Like, because they were more excited about the possibility of Kenny Omega or Will Ospreay, one of those stars going against another of the CMLL's big stars. Like, MJF never comes up in like in the list of dream opponents or dream matches. Because I don't know why. Because especially the Latin American Smarky fans, they aren't that big on MJF. Who knows why? So maybe that's part of the reason why I think this match will work. Because you will have this really hot crowd who doesn't like MJF going against the hometown hero. So I think that's basically what they are going for. They just want to give a happy ending to the show. Just have a really hot and a really happy ending. I think it's going to work. Hell, they might even get another match at All In. Who knows? So it's basically just divided. They aren't clamoring. They're more excited about the Death Riders and the Ops, Osprey, and Swerve match.
That's interesting. Like, I personally think that MJF is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And we just did the 30 under 30 list for Voices of Wrestling. And I had MJF 7th, because even though some of his stuff was shit, I do think if you have a filter, like the early MJF stuff, like he looked like he was on pace to be an all-timer. Like some of the early stuff, how they built up the Wardlow feud and how that all happened. The dog collar match with CM Punk, I thought that was my match of the year in 2021, above the Briscoes matches. Like, mm-hmm. I just thought it was, what he was able to do was so great. And then I think people have really soured on him because of the Brochacho stuff. But I think he was given too much creative freedom. And if you have a filter for him, it was kind of like Vince Russo. Russo had some good ideas. The problem was, once he left a place where he had a filter, Vince McMahon, you got to see a lot of the crap that he actually thought was good, and it just absolutely cratered. Because there was some good. There's a reason why he was in the position he was in.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what will happen in this match. And I'm also curious, not just the general fan perspective, but your perspective on this, because MJF is a very divisive figure right now in the world of pro wrestling because of some of this bad stuff that happened, because his title reign ended terribly. But the Bryan Danielson stuff was great, and he was a huge part of that, not just Danielson. So where are you at with him, and potentially, like, what is the finish of this match going to be?
Hell, about MJF. On the Lucha Jover podcast, we had the MJF fight because my co-host, Ricardo, he doesn't like MJF. Like he does, and the reason is because he thinks he's a really shitty actor. Like he thinks he's way over the top. He doesn't like how his promos. He doesn't like how he talks. Doesn't like how he acts. It's not even about the wrestling. It's just something about MJF's presence and how he acts that he doesn't like. Like he thinks AEW will be better if he leaves. That's actually, I'm quoting him. Now, I like MJF. I actually love a lot of stuff about him. And it's like you said, if he has somebody holding him back. Because we saw what happens when MJF has full control, and that's the fucking Brochachos. And that's just, for me, the dark days of AEW. And one of the things I love the most about MJF is that he's willing to be a fool. He's willing to be made fun of. He doesn't want to be cool. He wants to be stupid. He doesn't care about looking stupid. And that's rare in wrestling nowadays. Like, he's willing to go out of his way to look like a foolish asshole. And that's why I think he works better. When he's just this insecure guy. But when you do stuff like the Brochachos, when he tries to be cool, when he tries to be like the cool baby face, better than everybody else, that when he fails. When he has too much control, basically. So I want him to keep being a fool and to keep losing and to keep being an asshole, because that's where it works best. And what's going to happen on Wednesday, I think Mystico is going to beat him in the middle of the ring. He's going to tap out. And I think that's going to be them. The fans are going to leave home happy. They're going to, you know, they're going to be jumping out of their seats. But yeah, especially since he's doing the American stuff once again, the pro-USA stuff. And we are living, you know, in uncertain times. And unlike WWE, who's doing the Grande Americano gimmick, and, you know, he has the guy winning, especially on Cinco de Mayo and things like that, dressed with the American flag, I think they're going to do the opposite in AEW and have the really pro-US guy just lose in Mexico. And I think that's why it's going to work.
Yeah, I'm fascinated, because I think you mentioning All In potentially, like maybe an Apuestas, Mystico doing an Apuestas match in Texas might move a couple thousand tickets. I mean, let's be real.
Who's going to lose?
There is no way Mystico will lose his match in the United States.
But he will not lose his hair.
Yeah.
Will he lose his hair?
Well, my question is, will MJF lose his hair after he reportedly got the implants over in Turkey, was it? Like, will he be willing to shave his head? Or will they maybe push that to a forbidden door? But that wouldn't have the same kind of impact as it... Oh. I mean, a U.S. Apuestas match is cool, but it's not going to near have the same as it would in Latin America. And then doing it in Great Britain might not have really any impact at all. So I'm very, very fascinated with this match because of the amount of different directions. And... I just think it'll be cool to see MJF. Like, I'm a big fan of cheap heat. Boo the local sports team. Make fun of the person because of where they're from. Like, I think just the cheap heat kind of stuff is great. The Sin Cara line was incredibly, it was tremendous.
Amazing. It was amazing.
We know why it didn't work. And it wasn't completely because of Mystico. It was a multitude of factors, but it's just cheap stuff. Like, I love like old school basic pro wrestling. He's going to go in there. He's probably going to wear the Apollo Creed trunks from Rocky, and he's just going to be obnoxious and American. And he's going to get nuclear heat in that building. And I think it's just going to be great. Just Mystico just coming out looking like a megastar. Like, I'm really excited for this, but I want to transition to, you said that these multi-man tags are going to be, or like something that the fans are really excited about. And I'm intrigued too, because you have some big stars in Mexico on those. Yeah. You have Atlantis Jr. And I mean, Atlantis Sr. went up to Portland for this past Dynamite, which, hello, give me an Atlantis Jr. versus FTR match. That sounds awesome.
Thank you. Please.
Yeah, please, Dax, just grow your hair out for 3 months.
That made me so happy. Seeing all Atlantis beating up Dax. Oh, my God. That was just beautiful.
Atlantis trying to climb over the guardrail was awesome, too. Just, just a perfect old man spot. But I know AEW's had a lot of success when they have sent stars to CMLL in the sense that, and I mentioned earlier, tickets have moved when they brought AEW stars in. And it's been like Bryan Danielson, John Moxley. And you have Moxley, the Death Riders, and the Young Bucks in one of these matches against the Ops. It's pretty much an all AEW match. But why is, like, do the stars of AEW really resonate that heavily with some of the fans in Mexico to where that's why they're so excited?
It's because they never see them and they want to see them live. Like, I don't know if Ospreay has been in Mexico. I forgot to check that. But people want to see him. But like, sometimes when they do CMLL Informa, and which is like where the CMLL drops their news, sometimes a lot of fans are just asking, especially when they talk about AEW, when is Kenny coming? When is Will Ospreay coming? Since AEW has been sending some of their stars, they want to see more of them. They want to see Swerve. They want to see Kenny and Ospreay especially. Those are the two names that are really resonate. So that's why I was really, like, surprised when Kenny was reading off on last Wednesday. Because I thought he was going to Mexico. I don't know if it's because of a visa issue. Maybe Kenny will appear as a surprise. Who knows? Looking for revenge against Okada. I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, basically this is a situation that they pay to see an AEW show and they want to see the AEW stars alongside their own stars, because they can see Mystico every Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, but they don't get to see, I don't know, the Young Bucks on, like, every week. So basically that's why it's for this show they're interested on the AEW stars, because they never get to see them. Yeah, so basically it.
Okay, that makes some sense. I did take a look. According to Cage Match, just with a little quick search, I think this is Will Ospreay's first match ever in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
I did a quick search of all his matches, typed in Mexico, nothing. Which, to me, is really surprising that Ospreay has never worked in Mexico. And it opens up the idea of once we kind of get past this all-in stuff and maybe they send Ospreay down to Mexico and set up something like maybe an anniversary match against a Mystico. Because I like CMLL, but I'm more of a casual viewer where I pop in and I watch like some recommended matches just because I don't have the bandwidth to follow the promotion as much as I'd want to. But it's so interesting that Ospreay has not worked Mexico. And I'm curious your thoughts, because he hasn't worked Mexico. Is it a mistake that he's just against AEW guys, or are they keeping stuff in the holster for something down the line?
I'm thinking he's coming back. Because remember, he doesn't have the title. Like, after all, what does Ospreay has? He's not going to go to the G1. He's not going after the title. So maybe he'll go down to Mexico 1 week, 2 weeks. That's what I'm thinking after all in. Because maybe at all in, he will probably wrestle Swerve, or maybe he would team with Swerve and wrestle the Young Bucks. So maybe those are the two roads start for Ospreay to all in. So, but after that show, Hangman would probably be the champion. So what's next for him? So I'm thinking that maybe he's gonna come back on, or maybe he'll get the itch and he'll go to Tony, please just let me go wrestle, I don't know, anybody. Let me wrestle Templario down there. Let me wrestle, I don't know, Atlantis Jr. We'll see. That's what I'm thinking. I think he's going to... This is not the first or the last time. And obviously, the show has been successful. And we're going to get Grand Slam Mexico next year. So maybe we'll get more one-on-one matches next year. But who knows?
I'd be really intrigued to see if they do a more one-on-one matches. I want to clarify this, too, just because you have a lot more of an understanding of the culture of what Lucha Libre is. Do one-on-one matches don't happen very often, and like a lot less than they do in like the United States. Is that something that will, like, I'm trying to find the right way to frame this. Is it something that the Latin American fans are clamoring for, like one-on-one matches, or do they just want to see like the biggest stars?
Oh my God. That has been like a discussion for since last Wednesday. When they announced the card, a lot of fans were disappointed because they wanted more one-on-one matches. They were like, we paid for an AEW show. We want to see AEW in Arena Mexico. But then the other side, the fans are, okay, but this is like AEW's version of Arena Mexico, so it makes sense that we have a lot of tax. So yeah, the fans are fighting about what is the best way to approach AEW Grand Slam Mexico, because some people want basically like a mini pay-per-view, and the other side is like, okay, but we want to have the stars, we want to see everybody as much as we can. It would be like a 2.5 hour show. I think it has 5 matches so far. Yeah, 5 matches. And so you just hit something like right there, because the fans have been fighting this week. Honestly, I think that the car is good. I think they're gonna have, I don't think they will be disappointed, the fans that go live. They're gonna have 2 one-on-one matches, and the tags are full of the stars. So I think they actually did a good job. If they did not have All In, like in I don't know, 3 weeks, in 1 month, AEW Grand Slam Mexico will probably have bigger matches, bigger one-on-one matches. But again, we have a pay-per-view in a couple of weeks, so they have to hold off some stuff. So that affects it too.
I do think it's really cool that they're not just doing the Wednesday shot. They're doing ROH Global Wars, where they're having some more matches. They're also, on the Tuesday Arena Mexico show, I think they have a couple wrestlers. I think, who's Bandito's working at somebody? Is it Neon?
I can't remember. Because on Friday, they have the Fantastica Mania.
Mm-hmm.
Let me check. But that, because that Fantastica Mania, Mexico, and Neon is going to be there. So I'm going to... Okay, Cage Smash. Is it Mascara Dorada, Místico, and Neon versus Bandido, Hologram, and Commander? That's for Friday. Bambolador versus Ricochet. Ultimo Guerrero versus Jota. So they have the big like CMLL and New Japan AEW show on Friday. So I think that's for the fan, they're gonna have like a whole week of like inter promotional matches.
Oh, okay. So it's the Tuesday show. You have Hologram versus Neon, sounds incredible. Josh Alexander versus Atlantis Jr., which also sounds incredible. Averno, Hechicero, and Ultimo Guerrero. Well, this is scheduled versus the Don Callis family of Takeshita, Fletcher, and Rocky Romero. But Hechicero says he's not wrestling. So now you have a potential X there. And it's Bandido versus Mascara Dorada. That's main eventing. Oh, buddy. Like, the Dynamite looks really good, but the Friday show and the Tuesday show looks better than all of them.
Yeah.
God, this week is going to be so much fun. And I think we could talk about how cool some of this stuff is, but I want to dive a little bit more into AEW-centric topics. And I want to talk to you about, because I don't know how much you love New Japan, because this Omega Okada stuff is really interesting and divisive, because you had this incredible feud that was about 2 years long in New Japan, and they're resurrecting it 7 years later. Yeah. But they did that crazy angle on Dynamite where Okada kind of joined the Don Callis family, or is at least aligned. It feels similar to what Will Ospreay did, because Ospreay aligned with Don Callis before the Forbidden Door match. And Kenny does the stretcher job and has the blood capsule and is like spitting up blood. So where are you at with that? Do you feel like they didn't need to do this, or is it good that they're trying to add a little bit for those people who didn't follow and were so invested in that New Japan feud?
Uh, I think it's fine, because just because they are doing this, it doesn't like delete all of that happened before. I like the New Japan feud and the New Japan matches are some of my favorite stuff in wrestling. It's one of those stuff that made me feel alive again in the fandom, which is one of those things that make me stay, you know, when you get to see those matches, especially when I was watching them live. But yeah, I think that AEW is basically trying to do like their own spin on it. I think that maybe they will go into the blood feud area, maybe for the match, I don't know, because they aren't the same people they were 7 years ago. I don't know if Kenny can still go on that level. I think Kenny can. I don't know about Okada. Or maybe Okada just doesn't want to go to that level again. He's kind of, you know, the meme of lazy Okada. So I think they just want to try something different. I think they are trying to add their own stamp, their AEW, like US TV stamp on the feud. And I don't mind it, really. It doesn't delete the previous feud. It doesn't delete the awesome matches. It doesn't really delete anything that happened before. I'm just curious about why eliminating Kenny. And maybe, I don't know why, so we'll see. Maybe he just wants a couple of weeks off, who knows.
Yeah, I thought the angle itself was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I know Joe Lanza from the flagship did a flagship plus over their Patreon talking about how maybe we just like watch wrestling too much and we kind of knew it was coming. But even though we knew it was coming, it was great.
Yeah.
And I think what's really interesting than having a lot of conversations with people about this was Okada has consistently attacked the stomach almost every time that they engage at any point. So there's like a built-in story behind it. And it's not just something that they decided to pull out of midair, which I think at least keeping the continuity is good, where I genuinely do wonder if those of us who aren't super invested and like Omega Okada got me back into pro wrestling after I was out for the better part of a decade. Hearing that match got 6 stars, I'm like, okay, why would a match get 6 stars on a 5-star scale? That doesn't make any sense. And I watched them like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then they topped it 3 times.
Wow. And, just...
like, it doesn't need it. But I thought it was really cool that they did that 6-minute promo video, and then they did the angle. And it almost like they're trying to appease everybody, and it's all still cohesive. It's such an interesting build. But I also, once they get in the ring, none of that's going to matter. They're going to get in the ring, and they're going to tear the house down, and it could arguably be, it's got greatest match of all time potential, because I do think that their match where Kenny won the title, the best 2 out of 3 falls, is still the greatest thing I've ever seen on television, let alone on a wrestling show. Yeah. It was perfect. So I'm intrigued to see what they do. But my next question for you, Abraham, is do you think that this match should go on last with Hangman Page trying to win the title from Moxley and defeat the Death Riders? Tony Storm and Mercedes Moné might be the biggest single women's match you can book in this country right now, and maybe worldwide. I don't know enough about Joshi to really have an opinion on that. But like, what do you do with these guys? How long do you actually give them? Because these guys could go 75 minutes and it would be phenomenal, but you have other matches.
And, okay, let's state first that All In is fucking crazy. Like, that card is just, I don't know how he actually did it. He actually made, like, a possible, it can be, like, one of the greatest shows, I don't know, easily. Like, made on a stadium. I think that if Okada and Omega closes the show, I think Hangman is going to lose. So I think they're going to tip that off if they actually leave that match last. But I think even if it's in the middle of a card, I think it can work. I don't think it will kill the crowd off. Good luck for the next match. But This is a really hard question. I don't know. If it was me, I would close the show with Hangman winning. Unless he's going to lose, then I would close the show with Okada and Omega. Because that's just... Yeah, that's a really hard question. What do you do? Good luck, Tony, placing those matches. But I don't think that will go like a long time. I think that match will probably last like 30 minutes. So I think it will be intense. I think part of the story will be that it will be shorter than the other matches is because of the, you know, of the injury that he sustained this past week. That would be like the out to have like a short match. And they will probably use weapons. I don't know if they will be legal or not. I think it will be like a compact version of their big matches. Like 30 minutes on a big stadium. So that's my prediction. I think it's gonna be like in the last, like on the, one of the last three spots on the map, on the card. But oh my god, can you actually run the Monet match, that match, and the Hangman match back to back? Can you actually? Would you dare and do that?
Yeah,
that's what I will do.
Absolutely. I think this myth of the cooldown match.
Yes, doesn't work.
It can work. I think especially with something that could be like is really really emotional, like when Cody faced Dustin at the first Double or Nothing. Mm-hmm. That was an emotional match. That was a match that it almost felt like Dusty came back from the grave and plotted that whole match out. It was just, yeah. It was so Dusty. It was so territory wrestling. And it was meant to draw the emotions, and it did. It hit every mark. But they didn't have like a super deep roster yet, so it kind of felt like there was a cooldown match between that and the main event. But I don't think you have to. And I think you can go back to like Wrestle Kingdoms 9, 10, and 11, where they just have at the end banger after banger after banger. And if it's good, the crowd will stay hot.
Yeah.
So I would seriously consider this as a triple main event if I've ever seen one. All three of these could be the main event, and I don't think there would be a real argument that says it shouldn't be. I would run them back to back to back. And make them feel really important because the AW Women's Championship is obviously bigger than the TBS title. The World Championship is the biggest in the company. And they want to make this unified title, like not a mid-card title,
yeah,
but almost like a secondary main event title where if a heavyweight, like almost how the Intercontinental they tried to use when Shinsuke Nakamura was trying to establish it, where this can main event shows and it will draw. So I would just run them back to back to back and be like, you know what? This is our biggest show of the year. We're going to give you, to finish the show, the biggest matches that we have. I would just unload the chamber and say, hey, Tony, Mercedes, top Omega Okada. Hangman and Mox, top both of them. Yeah, almost like the people talked about the Attitude Era where you would go back from behind the curtain and they would just say, top that. It wouldn't always be wrestling. It would be more angles and promos and that kind of stuff. But there was a sense of, hey, we're competing within each other to see who can be better than the next guy. I think you can harbor some of that with AEW. And I think some of that already exists. I have multiple shows, multiple Revolution pay-per-views, let alone, yeah, where there are multiple five-star matches. Because they keep going out and performing. I have no problem with those three going on back to back to back. And if there's somebody who does have a problem, I don't know, maybe go pee before the first match of those starts or something.
Like, yeah, the video package.
Yeah, go during the video package. Like, and hope there's a porta potty on the field so you don't have to go inside. But I really don't think it'll be too big of an issue, Abraham, because if it's good, the fans will care. And if they know that those three matches are 1, 2, 3, they will care and they will be loud.
AEW did something similar this year. Like for Revolution, they had the Mariah May and Tony Storm match, followed by Kenny Omega and Takeshita, followed by Ospreay and Fletcher. All three back to back to back, like a bloodbath, like a regular great match and a cage match. So there's proof of concept that you can put three hot matches that people care about, three matches that will go to a crazy level back to back to back, and it works because people love those three matches and they both work in their own way. And if you, these people are professionals, they will know that if Okada and Omega went really crazy, maybe the next match will start a little slower and they'll get the crowd back. I think I trust the professional wrestlers in this instance. So yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to kind of see how this all shakes out, because this all-in show looks like it could be an all-timer. And
I know,
maybe, like, are we setting ourselves up for failure because these AEW shows keep showing each other up that, oh, another American all-time pay-per-view. Maybe not failure, but we're expecting this to be another one of the greats. And then if it's just really good, are we going to come away disappointed because it didn't reach the levels of other AEW shows? Not necessarily comparing it against wrestling as a whole, but comparing it against, like, comparing against ourselves, where we've seen more success from what this company has offered us.
I don't think it will be. It would be quite embarrassing if the show is just, like, good enough and we're like, we expected 5-star bangers all night long. We expected 5-star bangers in the last two matches. I think that fans need to adjust, maybe lower a little bit their excitement so they can actually. I don't think they will disappoint us, though. I think we will get exactly what we came for. I think they will give us exactly, because how with this card and these wrestlers, unless something goes really wrong or one of them just shows up sick or just doesn't want to work that night, I don't think it will happen. I don't think we won't be disappointed. Like, it is really hard. Unless you're a really hard grader or, like, with matches, or you are, I don't know, like, these kind of really, you're asking way too much about it. I think it will be going away happy from that show. That is the kind of show where you look for flights just to see how much does it cost to go there. It is that good. It's like when I heard about Danielson and Ospreay on St. Louis, I looked for flight tickets, I admit it. I was like, maybe I should be for that. I did not go, but I looked for the ticket for the flights. They were really expensive, though.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. The second they actually announced Omega Okada, I talked to my wife, and I'm like, I really want to go to the show. And then she reminded me that she's going to be in Yellowstone, and I have nobody to watch the dogs. So that ended up being a non-starter. But, man, like, I haven't been to, like, I mean, I went to the two all-out shows. Full Gear was in Minneapolis. That was fun. I got to see Hangman win the world title. But this show just feels, it just feels different.
Special. And
I'm honestly surprised that I don't think they've broken 20,000 in tickets yet. But what's really interesting about the field that they're running is it's the old Texas Rangers Stadium. So I think they're getting a deal on it, because they don't run a lot of stuff there anymore, but they haven't torn it down. I don't know how much you know about the area, Abraham, but they have, like, Arlington, Texas is a south suburb of Dallas. It's where the Cowboys play there, the Rangers, the Mavericks, the Dallas Stars, the hockey team. Like, they're all in a relatively close proximity to each other. So I'm curious, and I actually think the baseball stadiums are next to each other. Oh. So I'm wondering how long, like, if they're getting some kind of deal, because if you tear it down and put up, like, a parking ramp, you might be able to, like save a lot of space. So I am curious about that, too, because, I mean, remember, when we went to All Out, it was at the Now Arena, which was, like, the worst big arena in the Chicagoland area, but they got a cheap deal.
Yeah. Then they went to the Oh my God, what's the name of the other arena?
United Center.
United Center. Oh yeah, I don't think there was a deal there.
No.
But that was way, but way easier to go there. Way easier.
It's the United Center is the second biggest basketball mid-size arena in the United States, or sorry, in North America. The only bigger one is in Montreal, which seats about 21,000 people. United Center, I think, is just over 20.
Oh, whoa. Oh, yeah. So, but I was going to ask, since the show is not full yet, is it, like, I don't know about tech. I had never been to Texas. Is the Arlington area, like, really hard to get to? Does it get, like, a lot of tourists? Does tourists go there to that area? Maybe that is affecting the ticket sales. Maybe people just don't go to Arlington that much. I don't know.
So Arlington is like in the Dallas, like Fort Worth area. Like when people say like they're from Dallas, it's kind of all encompassing. Like when you say you're from Los Angeles, but hey, maybe you're from Malibu or maybe you're from Long Beach, where they're all in like the Metroplex. Arlington is a big suburb in the Southern Metroplex, but it's also like 20 minutes from the airport. So Dallas is very widespread, but I do think that a lot of people do stay in like the Arlington area, but I've been to Dallas a couple times and I went to the G1 show and that was a lot of fun. But I do think that when you have something like this, I do think that there will be some of that, but I also don't think it's going to be like, oh, you fly into Los Angeles and it's going to take you an hour just to leave the airport. It's not going to be like that.
Yeah. Okay. At least. Okay. So we'll see how they keep promoting the show, see how it does at the end. I think that we have like a lot of walk-ups too. So we'll see. And also, I want to talk about something negative out of AEW. Can we do that?
Something absolutely.
Bad. We have been sucking the promotion up today because they have been doing a really great job. Okay, here's one of my main complaints. Adam Cole, we need to get the TNT title off him and just like stick him in the six-man division and just have that TNT title just between the mid-card good workers and just have like, I don't know, Speedball, just give the title to Speedball and just let's see what happens. I think that would be something really cool to revive that title because it has been kind of dormant. Like, when was the last time you cared about the TNT title? Honestly,
probably when Daniel Garcia won it, and then the second he won it, it just kind of went away.
Yeah,
I do think that they're setting up Fletcher to beat Cole at All In. So, and they gave Takeshita a nice run with that title, and then he had a nice run with the international title. I do think that this is going to be like Fletcher's establishing himself as a real presence as a singles. He obviously had the great series with Ospreay and he's had great singles matches, but I think establishing him with the title is probably the next step in his ascension. And yeah, I'm sure Adam Cole is a decent guy. I'm sure he's nice, but yeah, as a professional wrestler for who I want to watch, I hope he goes away and doesn't come back. I just have no interest. Just like Roddy and Kyle O'Reilly should just be a tag team and just whip ass every single week. They don't even have to win. Just be a good TV match, like tag team, and have really good matches. That's all I want. Like sometimes wrestling just isn't that hard.
Yeah, I know. People just make it harder, make it sound harder than it should be. It's just people wrestling to win, get paid. By winning, you get paid more. By winning, you get to the championship. You get a championship match. And if you win, you're the champion and you get more money. Simple. I don't know why people make it harder than it is sometimes. So, yeah.
I don't know either, man. It's a wild conundrum for me. But at the end of the day, Adam Cole must have some metric that says he's good for business. What that is?
He's a lot of, like, he's on TV a lot. There must be, like, I want to see those numbers. I want to see who really cares that much about the boom. Because I stopped caring about the boom back in NXT, the NXT days.
I still remember I was living with my, I just moved back to Minnesota. I was living with my best friend at the time. And I watched that Brooklyn show where he debuted and beat up Drew McIntyre. I'm like, oh, sick. Adam Cole's here. I like Adam Cole. That went away pretty quickly.
Boom! So,
yeah. Like, the dudes in his faction are more interesting than Adam Cole. It's wild.
Always has been. Yeah. Oh.
Bring back yeah. Bobby Fish. I don't care if he's a wackadoo. Bring back Bobby Fish. I love yes. a big ass kicker.
Yeah, Punk is gone. He can't come back.
Bingo. Couple more things, and then we'll end up wrapping up here, Abraham. I want to get a sense from you what you think about this women's division. And I think a good place to talk is this past week on the Collision portion of the 4-hour Summer Blockbuster, the Tekla Queen Aminata match, where there's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of epitomizes where we're at with this women's division. There are the super pushed commodities, and there are those who aren't. It doesn't feel like we have a true mid-card right now, which is why I think Tekla was such a nice addition, because I think she's going to project to be like a title challenger. Maybe she wins the TBS title at some point, but she's going to fill out the mid-card that really didn't exist before she got here. Like, what were your thoughts, if you did watch the match with her and Aminata, where it was stiff and there was some no-selling at the end? And where this division goes from here? Because they haven't had an established mid-card. Are we finally going to start getting one? Are they going to get a little bit more time on TV? Like, the division's in a much better place than it was, but it's still in an odd one.
I was thinking about that earlier. This is gonna sound weird, I know, but we need like a mid-card women's title. Now, I'm not saying we should add more titles to AEW. In All In, they're probably gonna fusion the TBS and the women's championship. They're gonna become one. So let's give something to the other women to fight over when they aren't, you know, fighting for the top championship. Like you said, the mid-card, we finally have like a mid-card feels for the women. And we have also 4 hours of TV a week, and we can accommodate like a mid-card women division. It is not, I don't think it is impossible to do. Anyway, every week, even on Collision, we get like a squash match from the women's division. So we can just... They have the time and the space. So maybe just give them something. Or maybe like a women's tag title that has been rumored. That has been like the forever rumor. I think that will work too. Because the women's division in AEW has become like really good lately. It gets better like as the years go by. They actually have like a real stars now, like Toni Storm. So and Monet. So we actually... Let's give something to the other side of the women's division to fight over. So that's what I think. I think that we can actually see more stakes. We can see actually more of them if there are stakes attached to those matches. So who knows? That's what I think. We should add like some kind of women's mid-card title and just have like one top title instead of two.
I wonder, because I agree with you, but I wonder if we get a situation where, and this could end up backfiring, because when you do something like this, it can completely devalue and have fans completely not care about a title. But Mercedes wins the match, wins the world title, and then she drops the TBS title because she realizes, oh, I'm going to have to defend both of these at once. I'm not going to do that, even though she's got a belt collector gimmick right now. And then that's what establishes the TBS title as more of a mid-card title. And then maybe you have a tournament where you can get like a 16-woman bracket, and then the finals could be something like, I don't know, you could have Tekla make the finals against like Megan Bain. And
Willow.
Yeah. I think Willow's ultimate destiny is she dethrones Mercedes for the world.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh,
I actually think having her in the tournament and then like losing in the first round could actually be a benefit for her, where maybe it's Willow versus Megan Bain, and they have like a four and a half star match. And I find Megan Bain fascinating because she's a big woman in the sense, like we talk about like big guys in wrestling, like Undertaker and Kane were big guys in wrestling, but they couldn't really work that well. I think Megan Bain is a, considering like the size disparity, like she's huge in the women's division. She works relatively well and she does a good job for her size. I would recommend if you didn't get a chance to the Joey Janela Spring Break during WrestleMania weekend.
I
the
saw match it.
With Bozilla.
Oh, that was amazing. Good. Yeah. I was actually surprised. I was expecting that some kind of clusterfuck. I was like, oh my God, this is really, really good. It works.
I gave it 4 stars.
Yeah, me too.
They're both a little clumsy, but it's also harder for them because they don't get an opportunity to work with women who have size. There aren't a lot of women who have size like that. Like, neither of them are like, we're not talking like calling them fat or anything. They're big, they're muscular, they can
really tall
people around. Yeah. And I think that profile is really, really good. And she can work. She's not an elite worker, but when you have that kind of look and that kind of size and power, you don't have to be a great worker. Her match with Toni Storm, I went 4.25. I thought Toni sold her butt off, or was it Mercedes? I can't remember. She faced one of them.
Toni.
It was really good. I thought it was awesome, and I think they have something with her. But a match with Willow, who is also a powerhouse, I think you could have a really fun, like that could main event at Dynamite. And I think her losing to Bane would elevate Bane, but I don't think it would hurt Willow because her destiny is not the TBS title. I think that could be a really fun direction to get to where you want to go, Abraham, where you make it a mid-card title, but you don't eliminate TBS, because the whole point of the TNT and TBS titles are they're supposed to be television titles, and they're supposed to be great branding for your partners. Yeah. So I don't think they'll get rid of it, right, but I do think that it will accomplish exactly what you're talking about and get it to where it's a mid-card title. And I think that could be really, really exciting for like the depth of this division, because someone like Queen Aminata, she's really good. I think she's like stupid young. I think she's only like 22 or 23. And there's a lot of talent there, but
she needs where's something her spot? Else? Yeah. What can she do besides random matches on TV?
Mm-hmm.
What is she working towards? Because she can go towards the world title, the women's world title now. So that's why we need something like the TBS title to come back, to come out, to come back down. I don't know, that's like the wrong word. But just to give them something to work towards to.
I'm really intrigued, Abraham. I think this is going to be a really fun spot for the women's division. I wrote in, I think it was August of 2020, when people were just absolutely burying the women's division. I wrote that I thought it was well booked, and I thought it was well booked from the fact that they just didn't have talent yet. The whole Joshi idea kind of got scrapped when the pandemic hit, and pretty much the only one who stayed was Hikaru Shida, because I believe she at least was in a shoot relationship with Kenny Omega. Yeah. So it became a little bit more complicated, but they were just doing the best they could with what they had. And they had women who just were too green for national television. But in this country, unlike in other areas of the world, it's against culture to completely ignore having a women's division. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
In Japan, they have their own companies that are thriving. Here, it's different culturally. So I thought they booked it really well considering what they had, and they just needed to let these women develop, and they have, and they've gotten to a really good point. You have Willow, who's pretty much a homegrown star. Toni Storm isn't a homegrown star, but she became a mega star. She was number one on my 30 under 30 ballot this past, the one we did it last week.
That she's going to be associated with AEW more than any other company.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to be remembered for Stardom or Pro Wrestling Eve or WWE. She's going to be remembered because of AEW.
100%. And I even think, like, Anna Jay, I don't know what to do with her. She's, what, 25, 26 years old now. She went to Stardom and almost got worse when she came back. It was weird because I wonder if going to Stardom ended up Like when some people learn new things about what their job is and then they try to balance them out with the old things, they almost get confused and think too much. And I'm wondering if the styles in both places almost got her kind of confused in that sense. Because I've had it where somebody has shown me a different way to do my job and then I think too much and then I just bomb it.
Oh, okay.
So I'm curious if maybe there's some of that going on, because she's like, especially the deathmatch stuff, she's great. Like, you know what the AEW women's division should do? A women's deathmatch title.
Yeah, because I don't know, those are always great.
Oh, they're so good.
They have never failed. Oh my god, we're a women's deathmatch title. I'm for it. Thank you. Also, Chris Statlander is another one that came in green, and right now she's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you do with her? So that's why we need something for them to work towards.
Mm-hmm.
Something like even the tag title works. And they have been wearing similar, like the women that are together, that are teams. They have been wearing similar clothing. So maybe there's something to the rumors about an AEW women's tag title. Maybe.
I will give AEW credit because they haven't done this a lot. They've been doing undercard women's stories. Mm-hmm. The Willow and Chris continues to be like an underlying thing. It felt like their feud ended like 18 months ago, but they've kept it. They've kept it simmering, almost like a Dragon Gate, like side eye. Like, I hate your guts, but they're doing more things with this division instead of just focusing on the top feud in the company, which I think is a really positive trend. But Statlander's got her thing right now, almost with the Death Riders. Like, obviously, her and Yuta were best friends. They're in best friends, excuse me. And
both.
Exactly. Now, all of a sudden, Yuta's with the Death Riders, and they have an interaction, and then she stares down Shafir. Is that going to be a recruitment tool? Is that going to be a feud? I think adding that element to what's going on in this division is objectively great as well. They're doing more things with the women, and I think it's because they have more talent to work with. Like, we haven't even talked about like Thunder Rosa at all.
Oh yeah.
And when she's healthy, she can still go. Britt Baker is in
whatever she is.
Yeah, and she's good. Yeah. She's a good wrestler. She's incredibly over, but she's sloppy. She doesn't. Like, she's kind of got that Mercedes Moné in her where she'll just kind of screw stuff up, but she doesn't peak nearly as high.
Yeah.
But in this company, she became a megastar. So I'm really happy with where this division's at, and I think the patience Abraham's finally paid off.
Yeah. Because
now, like, we have all those people on Twitter who are, like, the stopwatch people. Like, oh, my gosh, there's only 7 minutes of women's wrestling. But they're using multiple stories, and they're doing a lot with these wrestlers now, but
they aren't like there was like one complaint about one episode of Dynamite, and I was like, but Willow is on a main event program. She's working with the Death Riders. Maybe they don't have like a, I don't know, 15-minute match, but they have been around the show. They have been doing stuff. So, and I think they have been doing a good job with the women's division lately. Like, it doesn't feel like it's forced. It doesn't feel like they're doing it just to do it, just to make the fans happy. It has been logical, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited to see the direction of this division. I'm excited to see this continued direction of this company, because right now they're firing on all cylinders. The 4-hour summer blockbuster was a massive success. All 4 hours were in the top three or four on all of cable television. Don't let anybody say that 398,000 between 9 and 11 p.m. on a Wednesday Central Time is a failure. That's good. And it's all relative to what the market is doing. So I'm intrigued to see that. I'm intrigued to see if they keep building momentum with WWE kind of becoming somewhat crestfallen. Oh. Where they're on a downward trend. The fans just work themselves into a shoot, work the company into a shoot to bring back R-Truth. I like Ron Killings. Ron Killings in TNA was one of my favorite acts. But man, we're in a really weird spot right now. And AEW, with a great summer, which has already started off, if they nail All In and then they nail Forbidden Door, because now they're going to have like 6 weeks to get Forbidden Door now. That's the most they've ever had for that show. Like, we're in a great spot.
Are we back, Tyler?
I think we're back. I really do. I think
we're back too.
I think this company's in a great spot. And there's a lot of bad faithers out there, but I think they're doing a much better job with TV, going to smaller venues. Like Portland, they had like 3,500 people.
And the venues have been looking better. They look special. Even the camera shots have been changing. They're actually static. I can actually see stuff. Before they miss a lot of spots, they are missing less spots now. It has been even gotten better camera-wise.
Yeah, they have. I thought the presentation of the Owen final at Double or Nothing was the best AEW production has ever been.
Yeah.
They kept the same camera shot. They shot it differently. The lighting was different. They made it feel like a big deal. And it wasn't just the work in the ring, it was a 5-star match to me. I loved it. I thought it built like an epic. They peaked it well. You got the short arm clothesline by Hangman, and then he hits the buckshot for the win. I thought it was just tremendous from top to bottom. But the production has been better. And I think what's really cool about these venues is they're all different. It's not going into a 15,000, 20,000 seat basketball arena and just having the same setup. Like, look, if you can sell 15,000 to every episode of TV, you're going to do it.
Of course.
You go into Cincinnati, I think it was a couple weeks ago, it looked like a mini Budokan Hall. Like, Budokan Hall seats like 16,000 people. This one sat like, I don't know, 3,000. Yeah. But the way it was stacked, it felt like the fans were right on top of you, and it was shot so well. This last week in Portland, there was no entrance ramp.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool.
The hard cam was the ramp.
Yeah.
Hammerstein, perfect venue.
Mm-hmm.
They have been really killing it with the venues and the production lately. 2025 has been like a really special year for AEW. It's like they found themselves again after, the dark years of the Broadcast shows.
I really think that this can be a great year, Abraham. And I think All In is going to tell us, because they want to make All In their big flagship show of the year. All In's going back to Wembley next year. And they're not getting a true AEW show this year. They're getting Forbidden Door.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still going to be some AEW talent, but it's, I think they're doing a good job of, they're trying to run a huge stadium. They're not burning out the territory. And I think you're going to start getting the Will Ospreay build to winning the world title at Wembley Stadium next year. That's the direction I think we're going in.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how all of this manifests and works throughout the course of the next, I don't know, year and a half, because they have the money, they're profitable. And now it's time to kick things up a notch. And I think that they are doing a really good job of understanding where their lane is, selling out these TVs, making it look like a big deal and feel like a big deal. Now all of a sudden you go to like 5,000 seat venues and you start selling those out. Go up to 7,000 to 8,000 seat venues and sell those out. Man, then maybe you do a Grand Slam TV like you did at Arthur Ashe, but maybe you run a small soccer stadium which can sell 25,000 to 30,000 tickets, and or you do a pay-per-view at one of those. Like, I think if they continue this path, because remember, they did this initially, running smaller venues, making the buildings feel red hot. If they keep with that and they don't get sidetracked like they did when they got CM Punk, because they started to do a bunch of weird stuff, I don't think AEW will be on the level of WWE for a minimum 10 years, because WWE just has such a rooted history and a rooted fan base. And the fan base that they have right now is loyal beyond reason.
But it's been changing.
It has been.
Just saying.
I think AEW is catering to what a wrestling fan wants, and WWE is catering to what that fan base wants, which good for them, but it's not for what this fan base wants.
And those fans will leave.
They will.
Yeah, because if you are doing your show for, I don't know, the TikTok crowd or whatever, the crowd of teenagers on early 20-somethings, they are going to grow out of it. They're going to go look for something else after. I think just going straight for wrestling fans is a better bet. Because look at us. We are here talking about wrestling on an afternoon. Why? Because we just love it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it is smarter to just go to wrestling fans.
I agree completely. Yeah. And this is going to be a really, really fun year for professional wrestling. It's going to be a really fun year to watch, play out for this company. And All In is going to be one of the biggest shows of the year. I mentioned my wife's going to be out of town. She's going to be in Yellowstone that weekend. And I told her it's probably good. She's like, why? I'm like, because I'm going to watch starting at 2:00. I'm going to watch wrestling for 5 hours. I'm going to yell. I'm going to scream at the TV, and you're going to hate me. So it's best that you're not here. It works perfectly. And if they nail All In, I'm really, really intrigued to see if they can bring back some of those fans that were there for Hangman's initial run. And it's been a 3-year odyssey since he lost the title to CM Punk. If this can bring some of those people back, because hopefully the Punk stuff and the fallout afterwards really drove a lot of those people away.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun one, Abraham. And
I can't wait.
Oh, me either. And I'm incredibly appreciative that you jumped on here today, because I think, one, I always like talking with you. Two, it was really cool to get the Latin America perspective on these AEW shows, and then to get your perspective on the promotion as a whole. It was a lot of fun, and I want you to tell the people what you got cooking up and how they can listen to your show, which is, I'll be honest, I understand very few words of it, but I like listening to you guys because I love listening to people talk in their first language. It's just fun for me.
Oh, thank you. And it was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me and for letting me be on the show. And I'm trying out my English once again. So thank you. And if you want to keep listening to me in my native language, Spanish, Los Lucha Jovers is a Spanish podcast. We basically talk about the Mexican wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and US wrestling all around the world. Or all around the world. And I think that we do a good job at it, because in the Spanish wrestling media market, they don't talk a lot about the important wrestling topics. It's mostly WWE centric and WWE side. So what we try to do is just give you more international news. We try to give you a different perspective than Lucha Libre Online and those kind of sites. And we try to bring an historical perspective too. And we have fights about MJF and promotions. So I think it's a good time. So if you want to join us, no Spanish, it will be perfect. I also write for the site. I do book reviews, show reviews, and sometimes I could call a column or something. I don't know, whatever I have on my mind. Rich Craig, the boss, lets me do whatever I want, basically, on the side. So thank you, Rich. And you can find me on Instagram, Slim8101. You can follow me there. You can buy my books in Spanish if you want to. That would be really appreciated. And yeah, so whenever Tyler wants me back on the show, I'll be back. So thank you, Tyler.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's a great to have you on. And We'll bring you back here soon so we can get some more of your opinions, because I like talking to people that aren't Fred. I love Fred, but it's good to be able to have different perspectives so we can have some good conversation. I think we nailed that today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please give us a 5-star review. Go subscribe to the podcast and the Voice Wrestling Podcasting Network, where you can catch Los Lucha Jobbers with Abraham and Ricardo. Thank you very much. Take care. God bless.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.